Jeanne Flavelle's Hot Commodity Podcast Series. Empowering clients with commercial intelligence, supply chain expertise, and risk management solutions.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Mike Coughlin, President and CEO of McKinney Flavelle, and today is March 10th, 2020. And welcome to our Hot Commodity Podcast Series. I'm joined by two lovely guests, Kevin Cohns, Vice President of McKinney Flavelle. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Michael, and thank you for calling me lovely.
You're very lovely. And Nicole Thomas, Vice President, Information Services, all the way from Atlanta. How are you, Nicole?
Where's my lovely? Now I'm jealous.
I said too lovely.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Kevin took all the credit for it, so.
He did.
I felt some kind of way
about
that.
He always does that.
You're used to that by now. Come on.
And today, Holy WASD Day, a lot happened on the sugar side. Not so much on the corn, but I thought we'd do a quick recap of it. And since Kevin and I are the only ones left in the office now, are you the only one left in your office, Nicole? Is everybody else working from home?
I am. I kicked my son out. Oh. So it's just me.
Very nice to see you. Yeah. Survival of the fittest.
Hey, you got to get them to work early. Teach them young.
Right.
Come on.
That's right. That's right. So I hope everybody out there is safe and doing well with all the craziness that's happening in these markets. And for the last couple of weeks, we've really been talking about the uncertainty and craziness of these markets. And Nicole, why don't you start us off by talking a little bit about corn and what the USDA did or did not do today.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what they did not do was make changes. It's pretty boring, actually pretty boring corn report. In the domestic market, ending stocks still sit at 1.892 billion bushels.
Okay.
Far more impactful on prices right now is everyone is worried about COVID-19, what that's going to mean for demand ultimately. And I think as far as the balance sheet is concerned, USDA wisely left everything unchanged in that we, you know, on one hand are looking for greater demand via the phase one deal with China, but we can't really get to that yet because so much of the focus is on COVID-19. And if there's anything, I think we're wondering about longer term is how all those things will play out kind of category by category with feed. You know, there's a case to be made that exports of meat products should get some support from that deal. When is the question, just because a lot of places are, you know, even though China seems to arguably getting things under control there, we're seeing expansion of the virus in other places, which could also impact our export number for corn, considering that, you know, we do ship a lot in the way of corn to both Japan and Korea. And both of those countries are sort of dealing with it now. And then who knows how challenging it's going to be to get things out of the U.S. as time goes on and this continues to grow. So from the corn side, not much to talk about. And on the global side, we saw ending stocks bumped up 500,000 metric tons. We're still projecting around a 23 million metric ton decrease in ending stocks from last year, but time will tell as far as the impact of all these things going on in the world and what we'll see with those numbers.
Right.
Want me to talk briefly about soy?
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, how about the soybean side?
Soybean side was pretty quiet as well. Still looking at 425 million bushels of ending stocks for soybeans in 2019-20. The one place we did see change was in the soybean oil balance sheet. There we had offsetting decreases or an offsetting change in the form of a decrease of 200 million pounds for biodiesel, which was offset by a 200 million pound increase to potential exports. And I guess nobody's surprised there as well, because right along with all the pressure the market's feeling from COVID-19, we're also feeling the effect of this huge crude oil drop in value. And, you know, doesn't take much to consider that that may be a bit detrimental to biodiesel consumption. And I didn't mention it with corn, but also ethanol, considering there probably isn't a strong incentive for blending right now. And then in the global picture, what everyone's been expecting, I guess, is just a continuing increase to Brazilian production. USDA now has that at 126 million metric tons. There are higher numbers being thrown around in the market for where we're going to see that all settle.
Okay.
But just like corn, you know, more about coronavirus and its potential impact on demand than anything that showed up in these figures today.
Sure. Well, it's a wait and see. See what the future brings on that.
Exactly.
Well, let's shift over to sugar. And Kevin, boy, you have a lot to talk about. And what did they do? And what's the impact short term and long term? And boy, guide us, please.
All right. Well, the first thing they did was taking a look at beet production. They lowered the number 127,000 tons. We've been hearing and seeing some bad weather linger, causing pile issues. And as processors try to get through those, you know, there's certainly been some lower production numbers we heard. I think that was reflected a little while ago when we had another processor declare a little bit more on their force majeure. So
Right. We
were kind of expecting that number to come down. So that was expected, maybe a little bit stronger than we were anticipating at 127,000 tons, but that's a little bit more work for the USDA to do to get the sugar market covered and supplied with enough sugar. But the big change they made was lowering Mexico's production number, 472,000 tons.
Holy cow.
We've had a lot of range, a lot of discussions over that, really over the last month and a half, as we've seen yields in Mexico certainly very low, and seeing the pace of the crush low as well, because it's been raining down there after not raining when it was supposed to. So now when they look at that, the USDA says, okay, how much sugar does Mexico have to export when their production is down over 800,000 tons from the average production over the last few years and 1.2 million tons down from last year's production number. So they had to lower imports, and basically they cut Mexico's imports to the United States down by 552,000 tons.
Wow.
Wow. And we already knew we were going to need additional sugar to get us back up to a 13.5% stocks to use ratio after the last WASD. So now we need even more sugar.
Does that mean 7% stocks to use ratio under this balance sheet?
They brought it down to 7.2%. That's
hold on, Kevin. I've got two steps before I jump. Should I? Two steps.
Not quite yet. Okay. You don't need to jump yet.
Okay.
So 7.2% obviously is temporary.
Okay.
Because the USDA is going to have to find sugar from other sources, and they're going to have to bring in imports. Under the suspension agreements, generally they're not supposed to do that unless they see an emergency situation until April 1st. I know a lot of users out there are saying, you mean this is not an emergency? Well, you got 3 weeks to wait, and it's probably not going to have a huge impact whether you did it now or in 3 weeks. So in 3 weeks, in order to get us back to a 13.5% stocks to use ratio, we need 768,000 tons of sugar.
That's a lot of sugar.
That is a lot of sugar.
Jinx.
So question, I guess, now will be, will they bring in this as all raw sugar? Will they split it up and bring in 500,000 tons of raw and 250,000 tons of refined? And your guess is as good as mine, Mike. But
yeah.
I think it would be wise if they did some sort of refined quota as well, just when you look out there how tight the market is and, you know, when you need to find product in a specific part of the country and, you know, in bags or totes or bulk, you know, certain things have been hard to find for customers the last couple months, really.
Wow. Yeah. So that just something's going to have to happen here in April, I think, is what you're saying. And it'll probably be a combination of the two.
I think it should be a combination too, yeah. But unfortunately, you know, no one asks me to write the policy and make that determination.
They should.
Because I think they should too. I'd have a lot of fun with that. But, and I'm sure I get a lot of attention too.
Yes.
But
good and bad.
That's not our role, good and bad, exactly. So in the meantime, I think we just have to kind of sit back and be patient and let the chips fall where they may. But I'm sure both the sugar industry and the sugar users and everybody involved is stating their case to the USDA officials to try to make their case as to what should be done.
Absolutely. And as those that aren't clients of ours, if you want our detailed information, I mean, market timing is going to be huge for this next negotiation, and talking to us about market timing and when you should pull the trigger for the next crop is going to be super important. So feel free to reach out and get our take on that. And it's pretty quiet at this point. People are trying to figure it out.
Especially now, it's going to be focused on the immediate versus what's going to happen in 2021 at this point. And we don't even have a beat in the ground yet, although we are literally, just a couple weeks away from some planting getting started out in Idaho and the plains and those areas. And obviously Red River Valley will be much later, but more to come on that as we see the crop evolve for 2021.
You want to touch anything on the world market?
Oh boy. Coronavirus.
There you go.
And we'll have to see what happens. Obviously there's a lot of fear over demand. The market has come off. I guess the old saying, you don't want to be caught getting too greedy.
Yeah.
And so you've seen this correction. It's a great buying opportunity, and, buy some today. And if it goes down tomorrow,
buy more.
Extending coverage.
Excellent. Okay. Well, thank you, Nicole. Thank you, Kevin, for a great recap of the WASD. And for those interested in our spring seminar, I know a lot of seminars out there are getting canceled, but at this point, ours is on, and it's on April 29th in Oak Brook, Illinois at the La Meridian. So if you're interested in checking out, check out our website at McKinney-Flavelle.com. And for more information and how to register, and those that did register, if anything changes, we're going to let you know. So hopefully this thing gets under the right situation and fears go away. With that said, as I always like to say, live with an attitude of gratitude. Enjoy every moment, every second you have with your friends and family. And until next week.
See ya.
Goodbye.
Take care, everybody.
That concludes this podcast episode. For expanded commentary and more detailed information, log on to McKinney Flavelle's IQ Ingredient Intelligence platform and listen to our Market Insights podcast. If you're not a subscriber, visit McKinney-Flavelle.com for more information. And as always, follow us on YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter.